Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 4, chapter 30. The activities of the Pachaitas, text 6. Kashishnuna Kanakavana Lushanina. Rajakapala Arjuna Alasat Kiritaha. Chara Muni Bhe Surendra Sevito Brudha Kanara Gita Kirti Kashishnuna Kanakavana Vibhushanena Ashtayudha Uchara Munibhi Surendra Sevito Guru Dhakanara Gita Kirti Kashishnuna, shining. Kanaka, gold. Vana, colored. Dvushanina, with ornaments. Brajat, shining. Kapola, forehead. Vadanaha, his face. Vilasat, dazzling. Kiritaha, his helmet. Ashta, eight. Ayudhai, with weapons. Anucharai, by followers. Munibhi, by great sages. Sura Indrahai, by demigods. Sedita, served. Guruda, by Garuda. Kanara, inhabitant of the Kanara planet. Gita, Sam, Kirti, his glories. Translation: the Lord's face was very beautiful, and his head was decorated with a shining helmet and golden ornaments. The helmet was dazzling and was very beautifully situated on his head. The Lord had 8 arms, which each held a particular weapon. The Lord was surrounded by demigods, great sages, and other associates. These were all engaged in his service. Garuda, the carrier of the Lord, glorified the Lord with Vedic hymns by flapping his wings. Garuda appeared to be an inhabitant of the planet known as Kanara Loka. So we're hearing this pastime with the Pachaitas, who underwent severe austerities within the seawater, as ordered by their father, chanting mantras, given by Lord Shiva, who able to satisfy Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And at the end of 10,000 years of severe austerities, the Lord rewarded their austerities and appeared before them. He appeared on the shoulder of Garuda. The Supreme Personality, quoted previous verse, appearing on the shoulder of Garuda seemed like a cloud resting on the summit of the mountain known as Meru. So, purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Generally, the Vishnu form is manifested with four hands holding four objects, a conch shell, disc, cloud and lotus flower. However, here Lord Vishnu is described as possessing eight arms with eight kinds of weapons, according to Yuda, Raghava, Acharya. The conch shell and lotus flower are also accepted as weapons. Since the Lord is the supreme controller, whatever is in His hand can be considered a weapon. Four hands hold four kinds of weapons, and the extra four hands hold an arrow, bow, trident, and snake. Sri Raghava Acharya describes the eight weapons as Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma, Saranga, Sara, etc. So these are weapons, just like the wooden utensils we use in the performing the fire sacrifice. They are considered the Brahmana's weapons. So they're good for keeping children out of the fire. But of course the battle is within the hearts of the conditioned souls. The king is always accompanied by his ministers, secretaries and commanders, and Lord Vishnu is also accompanied by his followers, the demigods, great sages, saintly persons and so on. He is never alone. Consequently, there is no question of the Lord's being impersonal. He is always Himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and His associates are also persons. From the description given in this verse, Garuda appears to belong to the Kanada planet. The inhabitants of the Kanada planet have the same features as Garuda. Their bodily features are like those of a human being, but they have wings. The word Gita, Kirti, indicates that the inhabitants of Kanada Loka are very expert in singing the glories of the Lord. In Brahma Samhita it is said, Jagadananda Koti Pratish Sesh Vasudari Ubuti Vinam. In each and every universe, there are different types of planets, and each planet has distinctive features. On the strength of this verse, we can understand that in Kanada Loka, the inhabitants can fly with their wings. There is also a planet known as Siddha Loka, where the inhabitants can fly even without wings. Thus, each and every planet has some distinctive facility. That is the beauty of the varied creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As Srila Prabhupada says, the Srimad Bhagavatam class, among Srimad Bhagavatam, it's for the devotees. Bhagavad Gita. Most temples usually held in the evening. That is for preaching to the new people and beginning devotees. So, very advanced topic. So, imagine, you know, speaking this. Actually, I was just thinking this morning that, you know, my mother had been cultivating in Krishna consciousness, you know, the last 42 years. And one of the ways I cultivate her in Krishna consciousness is I don't tell her these stories. She has firm faith in Krishna, you know, as a person, as he looks, and what he says. But I don't discuss anything like this with her. Although, you know, naturally, sometimes she'll see things, documentaries, and what have you. But I know that sometimes if I speak to her about something, you know, you get that blank look. You can tell it's just a little bit too much. So, you know, they're very advanced topics, very difficult. We're discussing planets being filled with many, many different personalities, God being a person, people that look like humans who have wings. Of course, you know, what's interesting that even, you know, Christians who accepted God as a person and who also, you know, within their drawings and pictures, they draw angels, and those angels have human forms with wings. They accept that. But if we presented this in the Bhagavatam, they would probably reject it. You know, that there is a planet. You know, they're very, very bad. Here, these personalities on Kanara Loka, they can fly with wings, but there's another planet. Then we get another level of understanding where they can fly without wings. So that would be even more hard to understand. That's a higher planet. So, you know, people do come across hearing different descriptions from the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, they happen to come across them. There's always benefit, but that benefit may not immediately bring them to devotional service. So, you know, Krishna describes that in the Bhagavad Gita. First of all, you know, he describes to Arjuna the difficulty of understanding Gita, especially the confidential parts of Gita. Because the Gita has confidential knowledge. There is more confidential knowledge, and there is most confidential knowledge. And in the 18th chapter, Krishna once again gives the most confidential knowledge, which he had previously said in the 9th chapter, that one should think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, practice thinking of him in devotion, in a favorable way, learning the art of devotional service and worship, offering one's respects for Lord, and in this way surrender to the Lord through that process of devotional service, and take up that path fully, 100%, mould one's life in such a way that is one's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, day in, day out, for one's whole life, that becomes one's whole life. So that is the confidential message of the Gita. But in verse 67, he says, "This confidential knowledge may never be explained to those who are not austere, or devoted, or engaged in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of him." So what you speak of, the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, which are postgraduate. So even the confidential aspects of the Gita are still, the entrance understanding. And Prabhupada says in the purport, "Persons who have not undergone the austerities of the religious process, who have never attempted devotional service in Krishna consciousness, who have not tended a pure devotee, and especially those who are conscious of Krishna only as a historical personality, or who are envious of the greatness of Krishna, should not be told this most confidential part of knowledge." And of course, the purpose of that is to show that we don't invite criticism of Krishna, which is destructive for them. So just like devotees usually have deities at home, and one of the principles of having deities in one's home is that one should be able to, cover them, so that if they have guests come into their home, they should not even look at the deities with a critical mentality. That these persons are worshipping these statues and wood and brass, this god, like that. People should not look at the deities with that critical mood, and therefore, according to who's coming into one's home, then the deity should be covered or uncovered. So there should be always some curtain or, some door that should be shut. Not that they're just open, anyone who comes in, they just look, what's going on over there? So, otherwise we invite criticism. It's not good for the Lord. Anyone that's dear to us, if we have our wife, our husband, our children, our friends, if we know someone's going to come and criticize that person or be very critical or look, we won't even bring where that person is like that. So it's for their benefit. It says, "It is, however, sometimes found that even demoniac persons who are envious of Krishna, worshipping Krishna in a different way, take to the profession of explaining Bhagavad Gita in a different way to make business. But anyone who desires actually to understand Krishna must avoid such commentaries on Gita." So, and then as we hear that, although Gita is nectar, but if it's what to speak of being spoken by an authorized devotee, but to the wrong participant, what to speak of if it's spoken by an unauthorized person, not a devotee, then it's like milk, being fed to a snake. And that milk, we might say, it's milk, what's wrong with milk? But it's been touched by the poisonous lips of a snake, so we don't take it. "Actually, the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is not understandable to those who are sensuous." So, as soon as one is on the sensuous platform, to that degree, they cannot understand Krishna. So, understanding Gita increases as one's sensuous position reduces. Even if one is not sensuous but is strictly following the disciplines enjoined in the Vedic scripture, if he is not a devotee, he also cannot understand. And even if one poses himself as a devotee of Krishna but is not engaged in Krishna conscious activities, he also cannot understand Krishna. Even if one actually has to engage in properly in devotional service. So these are all the prerequisites, and this is just for the Gita. There are many persons who envy Krishna because he has explained in Gita that he is the supreme and that nothing is above him or equal to him. There are many persons who are envious of Krishna. So of course, that's the point that will affect someone in the heart. You know, that when we discuss Gita and the confidential parts, when we present that Krishna is above everything and everyone, people will get, you know, within their alma. I'm not having that. So that'll disturb and make them angry. So the envy is there, but we've just stirred it up. We can stir it up a bit, but we don't want to stir it up. In fact, when a devotee presents a Gita, they actually want to invoke a favorable response. So, such persons should not be told about the Gita, for they cannot understand. There is no possibility of faithless persons understanding Gita and Krishna. Without understanding Krishna from the authority of a pure devotee, one should not try to comment upon Bhagavad Gita. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada, you know, in his preaching, we see that if he was preaching to persons, one time Prabhupada was he was speaking to like a room conversation, and that he spoke to a person for a long time. And then after the session, the devotee said, Prabhupada, you didn't preach anything about Krishna consciousness to him. He said he had no questions. He had, you know, Prabhupada understood. He has no interest to ask me anything about Krishna consciousness. I'm not speaking anything about Krishna. They spoke for a long time. And chat. Oh, where are you from? Calcutta. Oh, yeah. Weather's good. Other times, Prabhupada, if he discussed, he would talk that, you know, we must have food grains to live. And we must produce, you know, each country must produce food grains and distribute, and, you know, to the citizens, that you can't just eat nuts and bolts, you know, these things must. So then, you know, the confidential parts, or Krishna is the supreme person of God, no one above him. No, that's not there. Sometimes, you know, when Prabhupada, even with Cardinal Danilou in Paris, he, you know, the Cardinal wanted to speak with love of God. He kept pushing Prabhupada, let us talk something else. Prabhupada, you know, cow's mother. He wouldn't let him get past that point. He wouldn't let him move on. He wanted to talk the love of God. Prabhupada said, love of God? Your business is killing you. How are you going to talk of love? Sometimes devotees say, no, anyway, won't mention. But, so, you know, that is it. And of course we know that you know, one should also not preach the glories of the holy name to persons who... So we get people to chant, we get people to hear the Gita, but, you know, there are different levels of the Gita that we present to people, as much as we can hear them. So, you know, but especially the confidential parts, we should be careful who's, you know, for what particular part of the Gita, not just any part. But especially Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, these verses here are talking about people on different planets that have the bodies of humans and have wings like a bird. And so I learned this lesson very early on as a a brahmachari, there before I was married, it was in Perth. I was here in Melbourne, I went to Perth, and I was preaching to this guest, and we didn't have many guests, we had a couple, and usually they never came back. Because there was only a small temple and a house, and they just couldn't see. They didn't know the whole movement, they just saw, six or eight devotees in a little house in the suburbs, dressed strange and talking, from strange concepts. So, they just didn't think there was anything to it. But there was one that kept coming back and even helped sometimes. And he came to a class once, and it was about flower aeroplanes flying by mantra. And we were sitting there, and he said, "So, tell me about these flower aeroplanes." And I thought, "Oh, this is interesting." So I told him a few things. And he swore at me, starting with a B. Something balls do. And he just got angry at me. For me even trying to, speak that as if it's real. So I was really shocked, because he was a nice person, clean cut young boy, coming along. But when he heard that, that was the last time he ever saw him. He didn't come back. It was just too much. He vented his anger and disappeared. So, they're very... that was very early on, and I got a real, good lesson. How careful you should be like that. It really shocked me, because we were almost sort of, developed a bit of a friendship and everything, but it was just so much, it just changed, it was too much. But still, some things, but there's always benefit, there's no, if somehow people hear it, but it doesn't necessarily stir up some, envy or, aggravation, then... there can be benefit, as long as they don't commit offences. Therefore, Prabhupada says, Sharavan Suyas Cha Shunuya Abhiyodara Sopi Mukta Sabaloka Pratmaya Punyakamam. Krishna says, this is verse 71, and one who listens with faith and without envy becomes free from sinful reactions and attains to the auspicious planets with a pious 12. So this is a very interesting purport here. Prabhupada says, in the 67th verse of this chapter, the Lord explicitly forbade the Gita's being spoken to those who are enemies of the Lord. In other words, Bhagavad Gita is for the devotees only. But it so happens that sometimes the devotee of the Lord will hold open class. And in that class, not all students are expected to be devotees. And of course, when devotees hold open classes, they will generally speak, the topics that they may speak on are generally a little bit less risky, because it is an open class. He says, why do such persons hold open class? Is it explained here that although not everyone is a devotee, still there are many men who are not envious of Krishna? They have faith in him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If such persons hear from a bona fide devotee about the Lord, the result is that they become at once free of all sinful reactions, and after they attain to the planetary system where all righteous persons are situated, therefore, simply by hearing Bhagavad Gita, even a person who does not try to be a pure devotee attains the result of righteous activities. Thus, a pure devotee of the Lord gives everyone a chance to become free from all sinful reactions and to become a devotee of the Lord. Generally, those who are free from sinful reactions, those who are righteous, very easily take to Krishna consciousness. So by hearing the Gita, one actually becomes free from sinful reactions, and that righteous position is very conducive. It makes it easier for the person to then accept Krishna consciousness. The word punyakarmanam is very difficult. It's very significant here. This refers to the performance of great sacrifices by the Ashwamedha Yagya, mentioned in the Vedas. Those who are righteous in performing devotional service, but who are not pure, can attain the planetary system of the pole star or Dhruvaloka, where Dhruva Maharaj is presiding. He is a great devotee of the Lord, and he has a special planet which is called the pole star. So here we see that if a person hears the Gita from an authorized person and, you know, they get a little faith, or their faith is not disturbed, let's put it in that way. Right? They get a little faith because they're hearing topics which are not going to disturb them too much, and it's enough for them to keep their faith and hear about Krishna. Those persons get such value that they can even attain the pole star of Dhruva Maharaj. Now we know that Dhruva Maharaj, of course, is a pure devotee of the Lord, and that indicates that those persons on those higher planetary systems, they enjoy the results of that they have heard the Gita and from the right persons, and they understand that. Well, what are you doing here in the pole star, Dhruvaloka? I ended up at the Hare Krishna temple, I heard a couple of lectures. You know, a couple of weeks later, I hit by a bus and ended up in the pole star. And of course, on the pole star, they have, Dhruva Maharaj's influences there. That, so that there's some opportunities to keep their faith, develop their faith. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita also, you know, Krishna says in the 6th chapter, and of course here, like this Kanara Loka, this is another planet like that. You know, that those who achieve some significant punya karma, the blessings of the Lord, somehow or another, hearing the Gita, chanting, taking vishara, they can also go to planets like Kanara Loka and be inspired by persons like Garuda, and many persons there are also very expert in glorifying the Lord. In the Gita, again, verse 41, the unsuccessful yogi, that means someone who hasn't done, there's some piety through Agyana Sukriti, some devotional service, but not for a long time, not in a mature way, but somehow or another. After many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. So then they, you know, from these planets, they come down, and that gives them an opportunity to then, perfect their understanding of the Gita and to take up the process of devotional service. So that process of devotional service that's mentioned by Krishna in the Gita, and he summarizes that in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And basically from verses 45, I think it is. By the worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings and who is all-pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work. So, Krishna explains that many, many pious persons who have a sense of duty and they're going to perform a particular work in according to Shastra, what Krishna explains, if they perform their work, and in the following verses he describes, but they're performing their work unattached to the modes of material nature. So it's an interesting point, because they've taken such a birth because there's some piety, punya karma, even some, egalitarian decree, unknowing or devotional service. They've heard the Gita, they've heard the holy name, taken the prasadam, bowed their head before the deity, etc. And they've been given a birth by which they can work in such a way and be trained by the devotees to hear the sections of the Gita which are appropriate for them to learn how to do their work in such a way that they gradually first come to the Brahma-Bhukta platform. Not understand Krishna straight off, but just first that section of the Gita. That's what most people need to hear. How you do your work, which is not sinful, and by doing that in a certain way, dedicating the results to the Supreme, you can actually come to the Brahma-Bhukta platform, which is the Brahma-Bhukta first conception. And that means that one does one's work without attachment to the modes of material nature, without attachment to the fruits, dedicating the results to the Supreme. So how does one? So we know that, sutras are generally in the mode of ignorance, and vices are in the mode of passion and ignorance, like the merchants and what have you, and the general workers and tamaguna, rulers, administrators, rajas, passion, Brahmas, the priests, intellectuals, and those who give knowledge, guidance, in sattva, goodness. How do they work? If they're in those modes, and how do they work unattached to the modes of material nature? They do that by following Shastra. So they learn to have faith in the, they hear the, what are the activities of the Brahmanas. And they also understand, if you're a Brahmana, if you're born in a Brahmana family, but you're more attracted to the work of the sutra, and do that work. They learn these things. It's better to engage in the work according to one's nature, not repress one's nature and do something else. And if you do the work according to your nature, even though there's some fault, still you attain perfection. Whereas if you do another's work that you're not qualified for, that's very dangerous. And so they actually work unattached to the modes of nature by doing it according to scripture. And they learn that through, so for instance, people get married. It's called Vivaha Jagya. It's a sacrifice. That means that the nature is that they want to live in family life. That is their nature. There's some attachment to the modes of material nature. But to avoid attachment to the modes of material nature, they follow Shastra and they get married to one person and live with one person in that relationship like that. And that frees them from the mother's material nature by following Shastra. And even the sex life in that relationship is regulated, especially towards, you know, or particularly towards, raising children. And married life is for, raising children and performing one's duties in a cooperative way and living, peacefully and without, impious activities like that. So in that way, Krishna says, if they do that, what happens is that they're doing their work, but they know that the Supreme Lord, they're connected with the Supreme through Shastra, and therefore it gives them a sense that I'm duty-bound to the Supreme. So that's the beginning of this concept, and that the actions of my life will produce a reaction which will produce my next body. And therefore they gradually get the concept that I am not this body, but a soul travelling from one body to another, and everything I do is being witnessed and sanctioned by the Supreme. So they get this Brahman conception. That's the part of the Gita that they need to hear. How to do that. And by doing that, then Krishna says, by coming to that Brahma Buddha platform, they can then engage in devotional service. So, as Prabhupada describes, I think in verse 56, that, we hear that devotional service begins from the platform of Brahma Buddha, but if you look at Prabhupada's purport, we think of Brahma Buddha as, in one sense, this perfectional state of being completely on the Brahman platform, but it's not. Brahma Buddha begins from the Brahman conception. That's the place I had when I heard that from Prabhupada's purport. Wow! I was thinking of something different. I'm not this body. I'm spiritual. I'm taking these bodies. I'm getting calm and going from one body to another. I'm actually more one with the Supreme. I'm not sure what it is, but that's spiritual. I'm spiritual, and to attain that spiritual nature, I tend to need to work in connection with the Supreme. That's Brahma Buddha platform or Brahma Buddha conception. That allows a person to take up devotional service. A person, as Prabhupada explains in the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, that the whole process of devotional service, it begins on that platform that Krishna is speaking to Arjuna. You're not this body, you're an eternal soul. That's the basic platform that one can come to devotional service and engage in the service of the personality of Godhead. Without that conception, it's very difficult to have faith or make progress if one doesn't understand that there is spirit soul, or that there is a Supreme, or there is life after, anything like that. That conception is not there. To take that devotional service is very difficult. But if that conception is there, which is a result of piety, from sometimes hearing the Gita and chanting, taking the shard and bowing down the head, serving a devotee like that, it's very conducive. And then, as Krishna says, one can take up devotional service, and that devotional service is done under the guidance of a devotee, and by devotion, as we hear in Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 2, those verses, Punyashrava and Kirtanam, that by hearing and chanting, it is pious activity in itself, and gradually the rajas and tamas and the afflictions of the modes of material nature are removed. And Prabhupada calls it in the purport, in the 18th chapter, he calls it progress on the Brahma Buddha platform. So Brahma Buddha, to begin with, the conception must be there, that's Brahma Buddha. And progress on the platform of Brahma Buddha means that even, you know, still the Brahma conception is there, but the modes are still strong. And those modes, by devotional service, are then purified from the heart under guidance. Then one can understand Krishna after that point. Then, you know, the confidential parts of the Gita, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I must surrender unto Him. You know, there is a spiritual world. You know, Krishna says that there are so many different planets with living entities, and although the scientists are all against that philosophy, the whole world's against that. You know, if Krishna says it, I believe it, because He's God. That comes at that point. And then, as Krishna says to Arjuna, the 18th chapter, very nice. I think it's he explains to Arjuna, he tells Arjuna that must be before 66, that by surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can attain perfection. Verses 57-58, like that. So Krishna explains that if one takes hold of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then what happens is that the devotee can attain complete perfection in devotional service. They can fully understand Krishna, and they can also go back to the spiritual world, and that they can actually see Krishna face to face. And Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavad Gita there that one may think that Arjuna was a friend of Krishna. He was able to associate with Krishna and see Him face to face, but what about us? We don't have that opportunity. And Krishna is indicating, and Prabhupada is paraphrasing, that if one follows in the footsteps of Arjuna, he would get exactly the same benedictions and facility as Arjuna to be able to see the Lord face to face in his spiritual abode and have an intimate and confidential relationship with Him. So that comes last, you know. So step by step, these things. So, but what we shouldn't do is imitate advanced devotees. So we shouldn't imitate Garuda. Well, Garuda is flapping his wings and the sounds of glorification of the Lord is coming. I'll also flap my arms and make a big noise. In this way, like Garuda, I will glorify. We do that. We may look silly, emit some odors, so many different things, but it will be completely different to Garuda. But we should follow in the footsteps of Garuda, not imitate. As Prabhupada says, he quotes, I think there was an Englishman who wrote this little poem. Big, big monkey, big, big belly, sea lion jumping, melancholy. You know that? You haven't heard that? As Prabhupada, he spoke it, but it was it wasn't the Bodhi, I don't think he wrote it, but Prabhupada liked it. He quotes it: "Big big monkey, big big belly." So people like to imitate Hanuman. Hanuman is like sort of a Vanara, isn't it? Yeah, like a monkey type form, and eats ferociously. So they imitate Hanuman. "Oh yeah, I will eat like Hanuman." So they get the big big belly like that. "Oh, I'm as good as Hanuman. Hanuman's eats so big, I don't know what I mean." See them jumping? Melancholy. You can do the activities in the Hanuman? No, I can eat that. So we don't imitate. We can't imitate Arjuna. That I am speaking, communicating directly with Krishna. Krishna says in the Gita that for one who takes up devotional service, everything is revealed by Krishna within the heart. So everything a devotee needs to understand and do, all his activities are guided by Krishna within the heart. He's prompted by Krishna in the heart, and Prabhupada says, and that is always confirmed by the Guru. That is the difference. For us, Krishna will speak to us directly. How do we know the difference between our mental speculation and Krishna's prompting us within the heart? Because it's always confirmed by Guru, Vaishnava, and Shastra. But if it is confirmed by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, it's as good as Krishna directly speaking to one, prompting one within the heart. But we can't imitate Arjuna, that without confirmation that he's Krishna's. I felt inspired to do that in my devotional service. I'm doing this, doing that. The confirmation of Vaishnavas, Guru, Shastra. Oh no, that's not required. Krishna. So we don't imitate Arjuna. Then if we do that, we look as silly as trying to imitate Garuda. So therefore, as Krishna says, in all our activities, in devotional service, all the activities are under the shelter of Krishna, guided by Krishna, prompted by Guru, prompted by Krishna. But everything we do is sanctioned by the Vaishnavas, the Guru, and the Shastra. And if we do that, we know that we are properly situated. So for instance, we know that we should preach Krishna consciousness. That is, preaching is the essence. That is the mainstay of but still, we do that in a way that Prabhupada showed by his own example. In the way that Krishna says in his Gita, be careful who you're speaking to, be careful that you're speaking the appropriate sections of my Gita, or speak of Bhagavatam to. We follow Krishna, we follow the living example of Srila Prabhupada, we teach people about the holy name, but we're very careful in the way that we teach people about the holy name, we get them to chant the holy name, but the confidential, aspects, that is according to their, that is understood according to the level of active engagement in devotional service, and their level of understanding Gita is according to their active level of devotional service on the platform of, under the guidance of the devotees. And quite often I give the example that, when I read the Gita, I'd never met a devotee, so I had faith in Krishna. I thought, yes, Krishna is God. I'm a part of God. I'm definitely not God. I do believe, you know, I'm spiritual by nature and that I'm travelling through different bodies. I understood that. The faith is there. But, you know, there were so many misconceptions which I only realised later as I become a devotee. When I become a devotee in the Association of Devotees, then I understood how to serve Krishna and distinguish what is service to Krishna from what is service to Ganga's mind, you know. Which I had no ability to distinguish, even though I'd read the Gita. You know, so the process of devotional service, we actually have to engage in it under guidance. And as I've told the story many times, just to give a graphic example, you know, Krishna says, offer everything to me. Of course, when I was reading that, I was doing some landscape gardening. And because, what you know, so if you're making a lawn or something, then you get the rake and you take all the rubble, you know, from the building, you know, bits of concrete, rock and weeds, and you just put them in a barrow and you just, you know, put them somewhere else. And you do that until there's just a nice dirt, nice and flat and level like that. Then anyway, whenever I fill up the wheelbarrow with all this rubbishy stuff, I'd be thinking, so everything has to be offered to Krishna. So don't dump it where it needs to be dumped. And there you go, Krishna. I don't really know what you want with that, but everything has to be offered to Krishna. There's just no real concept. Only after a couple of years as a devotee, that one day I was thinking about that and it dawned on me that whenever I used to pick up my paycheck, there was no concept of this is Krishna's. That was mine. That was for the weekend. It just didn't even occur to me. You know, load of rubbish. Oh yeah, that's for you, Krishna, with all my heart. The paycheck, there's not even a thought of Krishna. Like that. So, you know, unless you're in this society of devotees, you can't understand the process of devotional service. You can't properly enter into the Gita. You know, you can have faith in Krishna, although, you know, the full understanding is there. So our realization these books is in stages, and our preaching of these books is in stages, and which is very nicely presented. But we shouldn't imitate advanced devotees, but we should learn how to follow in their footsteps. Any questions or comments on that? Well, it's actually natural. It's actually natural that, you know, if you think, I'm going to my office. Prabhupada mentioned this in the Gita. He mentioned it a few times. Verse 9, Prabhupada mentions a couple of times in the 18th chapter. First in verse 9 he says, Krishna says, Arjuna, when one performs his prescribed duty only because it ought to be done, so it's recommended, scriptures, and, you know, moral codes, etc., and renounces all material association, and all attachment to the fruit, renunciation is said to be in goodness. Right? So that's what we're recommending. Prabhupada says, prescribed duties must be performed in this mentality. One should act without attachment to the result. He should be disassociated from the modes of work. A man working in Krishna consciousness in the factory does not associate himself with the work of the factory, nor with the workers of the factory. He simply works for Krishna. And when he gives up the result for Krishna, he's acting transcendentally. And in another part, so literally, the person is doing their work for Krishna, and therefore they're detached from the actual work itself, the factory, the other workers, the whole thing. This is for Krishna. Because they want to offer the result to Krishna, then you naturally think of Krishna. So, for instance, if say a worker is going about his work every day, oh, this work, you know, driving me crazy, you know, what time is it? Oh, I've been here 10 minutes, I've been at work 10 minutes, I want to get home already. Like that. You know, and he's just absorbed in it. Then he gets a girlfriend. Try and marry that girl, and he wants to buy her a diamond ring. So he's working, he's thinking, I'll work hard and I'll get this, you know, nice ring for my girlfriend. It's natural. He'll be, you know, no longer the, you know, literally the grind of working is what takes up his thinking on getting close to my goal. He'll naturally think of that person and, you know, I've almost got the money like that. It'll be there. It's natural. He doesn't have to force himself, it's very natural. In fact, he will work better, isn't it? And therefore, you know, Prabhupada mentions that the basis of economics is family life. So he mentions that, you know, sometimes the boss would ask, you know, you married? Oh, yes, you can have the job. They know they'll work better than anyone. Because they're motivated. Oh, this money, I'll raise my family, get a nice home, a nice car, like this. But they're always thinking for their family. And because they're always thinking their family, they are the best workers. See? Now, what to speak of a material attachment, if you have a spiritual attachment that's not part of the illusory material world, it's natural to think of Krishna. That process we're given, and you know, therefore our discussions, you know, our Krishna katha with people is in such a way that they do develop faith that Krishna is a person and is transcendentally situated, as we see in this verse here. From the very beginning of Gita, Krishna tries to impress this point upon the readers and Arjuna. I'm a person, you're a person, everyone here is a person. The universe is filled with persons, and they're all of individuals in the past, now and in the future. They're eternally persons, individuals on the spiritual platform. So if a person has that, you know, that concept from the beginning of the Gita, which is the same presented here but with more advanced information as well, to understand, so God is a person. You know, I'm eternal, I'm a person, God is a person, and that's who I'm working for. Yes, if I can be a person, why can't he be a person? So that's the ABCs of Gita. So if we give them the proper information, then that faith, that will inspire someone to work. You know, why can't God be a person? I'm a person. If I can be a person, why can't God be a person? He's greater than I am. So that's the ABCs of Gita. Now, if we can speak that verse, what's that? 2:12. Is it? Yeah. If we can speak that verse, so nicely the person says, I really, you know, I can understand what you're saying. They can follow the... They don't have to understand everything about Krishna and the gopis and, you know, killing the demons and, you know, Garuda flapping his wings and saying a different thing. If they understand that verse, they can follow the whole process of the Gita, like that, from the very beginning. We don't have to go much... That, and that's what the second verse of instruction in the Gita to Arjuna. The first one is, you know, he tells him, you're speaking very learned, but you're a fool. So be quiet and listen. So, that, you know, so therefore, if we fail to preach Gita properly, then you're correct. How will they do it? If we can't get people to understand the second verse that, where Krishna gives his spiritual instructions, you are correct. How will they understand how to, you know, work and think of Krishna at the same time? But if they get that concept, he's actually a person, an eternal person within my heart. Like that, he knows everything, past, present, and future. They get those concepts. You know, you can meditate on those few points for the rest of your life if you didn't know anything else. You know, they're quite inspiring concepts. You know, as devotees, we can sometimes, you know, this is what I love about Prabhupada's preaching. He was a devotee all his life. He read the Gita all his life. And at the very end of his life, after all that preaching and everything, if he spoke about these essential topics of the Gita, you could see they thrilled him as much as they thrilled Sanjaya, you know, at the end of hearing the Bhagavad Gita. They're wonderful concepts. If someone had told me these things, you know, when I found the Gita, I was absolutely thrilled with these concepts. It was my heart yearning for them, and it changed my life. It's what the soul is searching for, that concept, which is ABC's the Gita, is what the soul searches for millions and millions of lifetimes. The soul. There's something missing. That's it. And we're like, oh, you know. I'll move past that. Good boy. I'd love to hear you. Now, if a person, and you're correct also, if a person hasn't understood that, verse 12 of the second chapter, are we going to preach from the 10th chapter? No. Imitate the elevated, there was about three or four extremely elevated devotees of which Tanya Mahaprabhu would speak certain confidential topics to. Not even Prabhupada said, not even Pantadatta. Are we going to speak that? It's not even going to do us benefit, let alone them. If we can't preach it, means we haven't actually properly assimilated it. We can preach something when we've assimilated it, and when, you know, that knowledge is so wonderful that it'll be bursting out of it, it'll be pouring our body. We just can't wait to speak it to someone. So we have to assimilate it, and if we assimilate it, we can then speak it with realization. Any other questions?
Regarding to the inclusive nature of devotional service, that this is what you mentioned, that everybody can do their activity according to their nature and offer Krishna.
Yes.
So how we can reconcile that with Abhilasitas in your party of karma, jnana, and
yes. So what happens, as we said, that first we take up devotional service with the Brahma-Bhuta conception of the spirit soul, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. My duty is to serve him. He is all-pervading. Everything is his energy. Everything should be used in the service of God. We have those understandings. We still have in our hearts at that stage tamas, rajas to some degree. Therefore, there's no question of anyavilasita in asanyam. No desire, because we have all sorts of things going on in our heart, material desires and ambitions. But if we engage in our duties, which are natural to us, and we do it dedicating them to Krishna, then those, the passion, the tamas, even the contamination of sattva, and we come to pure sattva, you know, gradually the modes come, then we can aspire to perform devotional service on that platform properly. Alright? So there's practice, and then we can actually do it. That's that verse. So when we speak, when those verses, what they do is they describe devotional service when it's actually being done properly. So for instance, if you talk about a mango, you talk about a ripe mango already. You don't, you know, we know that a mango starts in with a little bud. Can't eat that. That's, we don't usually just, some, you talk to a child about a mango, you don't talk about the little bud. You talk about a mango in this full situation. Right? When you talk about devotional service, you talk about it when it's fully, properly matured, and from that we can understand we're almost there, or getting there, like that. So when you talk about those verses, describe devotional service properly. And if we can perform that level of devotional service, then the Brahma-Bhutta progress is 100% complete. And if we engage in devotional service, it will bring us to that complete perfection on the spiritual platform, Brahma-Bhutta platform, where we are, as Prabhupada says in the 14th chapter, in the purport, the last sentence, about the varieties on the Brahma-Bhutta platform. Devotional service means we're on the spiritual platform, Brahman platform, but with varieties, and that unite, and Krishna is the basis of Brahman or spirit, and the unlimited varieties of Brahman or spirit, and that is mentioned. Prabhupada says, by following such a process, one becomes completely detached from all material activities. One who can thus situate himself in the Brahma Jyoti, or the different varieties of the Brahman conception, is equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in quality. So that by engaging in devotional service, it will bring us to that platform where we can perform devotional service completely on the transcendental platform. It is that platform where the, you know, the understanding of Krishna properly matures, his name, his form, his fame, his pastimes, like that, they become the assimilation is very, very profound, very deep and very profound. So we're aspiring to that, because that's the platform of properly doing devotional service. So sometimes Prabhupada says there's devotional service proper. In other words, yeah, you're properly there now. You know, before that, we're an apprentice. So someone's a doctor, or a lawyer, or, you know, carpenter. You know, they're an apprentice. They're not really properly there. In one sense, they are, because apprentice is good as a real thing. In another sense, they're not. So they're doing the real thing, but they can't do it independently and properly. There's a lot of mistakes they can make easily, get themselves into trouble, but they're not properly there. So there's a difference between being the apprentice and the master. So those verses describe this is proper, master the spiritual energy. So like Garuda, you know, Prabhupada mentions that the Vaishnavas, you know, first, when we engage in our occupational duties in the service of the Lord, we're using the material energy in the service of the Lord. when we perform devotional service on that level, we're actually using the spiritual energy in the service of the Lord.
I was also trying to understand. I think that there's a point in the sense that for doing the proper bhakti, because the nature of bhakti, trying to please the Lord, is always ever increasing. Oh, it's not static. It's not that I just got it, and that's it. It's always in ever increasing mood. So,
yeah.
How it's reaching that level, but at the same time always increasing.
Yes, well, the thing to understand that if we properly situate ourselves in our duties, understanding that through the Parampara, and the Vaishnavas and Shastra, Krishna has given me this duty to do. So we do that to the best of our ability, because if we do it whimsically, Prabhupada says that's not devotional service. So we do it to the best of our ability. And even because we're developing, even if there's some mistakes, we're still considered on the perfectional point. We're perfectly situated. So in spiritual life, there's perfect, more perfect, and most perfect. So, you know, the devotees, it doesn't matter that there's, you know, the what we may see is I'm not quite doing something proper. Or worse, we see some other devotee is not doing something so proper. What we should see is, according to the Gita, they're trying their best to do the duties that are allocated to them by the arrangement of the Lord, despite any imperfections or what have you, they are perfectly situated. We are perfectly situated. And Krishna just takes the good. From there, it's only upwards. Come on. And that's from day one. That's from day one as a devotee. That's the beauty of this. You don't have to wait 10, 20 years to be perfectly situated as a devotee. Yeah. Okay? Hare Krishna.